The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
All right, are you guys ready?
Listo.
Yep.
Okay. 3, 2, 1.
You're listening to the Fade to Gray Network.
We invite people of all backgrounds
to share their stories.
Their nuanced conversations.
And forward thinking.
And not taking ourselves too seriously.
Everyone's story matters.
Every voice is important.
Life is polarizing.
But not everything is black and white.
Come join us
as we fade to gray.
Hey, everybody. I am so happy to come and talk with you guys.
Come on, Seth.
To come and talk with you guys about another... I did it. Another best-selling author, blogger, and podcaster. I would like to introduce everyone to Matthew DeStefano.
Are you sure it's DeStefano? Oh. Because if you were really doing the correct Italian, DeStefano.
I think it's DeStefano, but we can check that with him here in a second. He is a best-selling author, blogger, podcaster. He is a social worker just like me. And he's also a hip-hop artist, I hear. But the main things that I want to emphasize is that he is an outspoken advocate for nonviolence. And he is a podcaster on the Heretic podcast, Heretic Happy Hour podcast, and his new solo venture, Apostates Anonymous. And he's written several books. Most notably, I want to give call-outs to From the Blood of Abel, as well as Heretic, and then his third edition to the Bonfire Sessions, which I believe is coming out. And I think that he's currently writing a book with my co-host of Mental, Michelle Collins, that's going to be coming out, which I think is going to be called Learning to Float. But correct me if I'm wrong on that stuff. But to get started here, Matthew, how are you doing?
I'm well. Thanks. Yeah, I think you got everything right. Some Italians do say DeStefano, just like we say mozzarella and not mozzarella, but we're in America. It doesn't matter. I mean, just the fact that you got it kind of right. I'm surprised how many people cannot pronounce my name anywhere close, even though it's highly phonetic. Like, it's just read it.
It's me. I have that problem. Guilty as charged. Welcome, buddy. Yeah, I have, for my defense, I have a friend in high school I grew up with. His last name was DeFazio. And so every time I go to like say your last name, DeFazio wants to come out, and something in between comes out that is just butchered of both.
Someone once called me Matthew Dysentery because they thought that'd be funny.
we won't be that bad. What part of this United States are you located in?
I'm in Northern California in a town called Chico, California. It's we had that fire a couple years ago that burnt down my hometown, Paradise, California. Mm. So I'm still up in that area, though I'm not sure how long I want to be here because we're on fire like 3 months out of the year these days.
Right. Yeah. Especially this summer. In fact, shout out to Andy, one of our original co-hosts. He lives out in that area that you're living in, Grass Valley.
Oh, sure.
If you're familiar
just
with
like
that.
An hour away. So yeah, something like that. Hour and a half, maybe. Yeah. I don't know.
I spent a lot of time out in that area. It's gorgeous. Yeah. So, but welcome. Yeah, welcome, man. Glad you're here.
Yeah, well, we just want to get your story. So, I mean, like, as a post-deconstruction podcast is what we usually term ourselves. We, you know, like to kind of get, how did you even fall into this crazy religion in the first place? Like, did you grow up Christian? Did you just happen into it? Like, tell us your story.
Yeah, I mean, I was thrown into it from the time, I mean, as far as I can remember, you know. I just learned, I'm estranged with my father, but I just learned that he didn't believe in dinosaurs. So it was that kind of Christianity. Like, it was like super young earth creationist. The Bible is
Ken Ham.
Yeah. Oh yeah, totally.
No, Chris, the dinosaurs were on the ark. Ken Ham believed in dinosaurs.
Oh, they were on the ark. Then they died.
That's what
they
Ken
died
Ham says.
After? Does he have an explanation for that?
Apparently, okay. I don't know.
Cause they were only babies on the ark and they couldn't grow up enough after the ark. Cause the ecology changed so much after the flood.
He must.
Oh, okay.
Yes. I learned about it.
He must have some fantastic, extra biblical, sources for that. But, no,
I was going to say imagination. Yeah, I don't know.
Or magic or something. I don't know. So it was, I mean, it was that kind of Christianity. It was highly, you know, imbued with rapture theology. It was terrifying to say the least.
Certainly.
And,
yeah.
And it kind of went that way throughout my teenage years. I got involved with music, became a musician, learned guitar and drums and bass. So I was in like every worship team ever. And gave a lot.
The two musicians, yeah, like, yeah.
You know, playing the same three or four chords and trying to set the tone for other people to worship, and for myself, I just couldn't. You know, it was one of those things. Like I'm a critical thinker. Like I've always asked like deep existential questions, even though I was like 5 or 6 years old. And I don't know where it came from. I don't know if it's how we're wired. I just think some of us kind of do that at a young age, and so I always did that. And, you know, when you grow up in a fundamentalist household and you think critically, it's not going to last forever. I don't know a single person who thinks critically who stays within fundamentalism. And
that's the point.
And so that's just what happened. Like I just started to ask the hard questions we all ask if we grew up in the faith, like, what's up with this Bible that we're told is inerrant? You know, what's going on with eternal torment? Like, this seems really radical and harsh. If God is so loving, like, I don't care if you send yourself there, like, God, do something. Like, this is bullshit. Can I cuss on here? Is that fine? I'm assuming I can.
Yeah. 100%.
Fuck yeah.
Okay. Fuck yeah. So, you know, I kind of had that falling out with the church, which can get ugly. Especially when you're like me and you talk about it, you say things vulnerably about yourself, where you're at, you feel lied to a lot of times. And so, you know, I went down this path of being, I wouldn't call myself an atheist, but I certainly was just like, I don't care about any of this. And I don't even know what I believe anymore. So it's like, whatever.
I understand that. Yeah.
You know, and then I found some better theologies and realized, you know, blah, blah, blah. Like, everything I was told about God was really just shitty theology. So, you know, I can reevaluate the whole thing now because God is not our theology. And we in the church conflate the two quite often. So rapture theology is theology. Penal substitution atonement theory is atonement theory. Like, it's not necessarily God. And you learn those things later, but you don't learn them from your pastor very often. You're told, this is it. End of story. You don't have a problem with me saying it. You have a problem with God saying it because it's right here in the Bible. So it's that kind of stuff. Yeah. And that just doesn't last forever. So, but it's a hard, you know, it's a hard breakaway from it. It's difficult, you know, friendships get fractured and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. The one argument I always hated as you're kind of like, I don't want to say waking up, but kind of realizing some of this stuff and allowing yourself to ask the questions is really kind of the way I like to explain it. You know, just follow the answers to the questions. Sure. Is the thing that drives me insane is like, well, you're just leaning on your own understanding, you know, or like, you know, how are you gonna trust worldly knowledge and stuff? And it just blows my mind that like, don't we all lean on our own understanding? Isn't that what we do? Isn't that what the people who wrote the Bible did as they were canonized the Bible? Isn't like,
but
how do you not lean on your own inner fucking understanding? You're supposed to lean on your understanding.
What, isn't there Seth? A verse that says not to?
Isn't there a verse that says that gays are going to hell?
No, yeah. There's actually technically not, but
well, there's six verses and it depends on how you read them. But something I wanted to mention in regards to the rapture theology is, as I have taken steps further away from the Christian faith, I've found that it was so much fear-based.
Sure.
And then how much control the church used in regards to that. And then looking, it's just like the DARE program in high school, right? Like the whole say no to drugs and all that shit. Like, it doesn't work. And yet, that's what the church relied on so much. And we can see it doesn't actually result in lasting change.
No, it doesn't. Fear keeps people trapped for a while, and maybe it keeps people trapped, some people trapped forever, but it doesn't work as a sustainable model. But a lot of churches, it's all they got. But those churches are hopefully dying. See, I don't know.
You're talking about, you know, growing up in a certain theology, a fundamentalist theology, and that it's not correct. And so now you've kind of like adopted a new type of theology. What does that look like? I mean, people who are listening are going, well, he's part of the heretic happy hour. Of course, he's a heretic. I mean, he's talking about how, you know, the Bible doesn't say that gay people go to hell. I mean, what is this theology that you're talking about? What does it look like? And how is it different?
Jimmy does.
I hold my theology loosely, regardless of what it is, and I allow it to change. There's a wonderful passage in the Bible about God's, is it God's mercy or is it God's love that's wider and higher and broader and deeper than our understanding? So I think no matter what our theology is, God is bigger than the box that our theology is. And I've gotten to a place where now I see theology as a pointer. So my theology might be, let's use the moon as an example. We're pointing towards the moon, and someone else could be pointing towards the moon from a different vantage point, and they could be saying similar things, but they all have their subjective pointing. And so that's what, that allows me to have empathy for you where you're at, or someone else where they're at, to say, we're all just trying to point at truth, goodness, whatever that is, God, whatever label we put on these things. It allows me to let people be where they're at and be where I'm at without any judgment. So for me, I personally believe that God is not violent. God is not wrathful. God is not spiteful. God's cool with science. God does not hate gay people. There is no eternal torture chamber called hell. God is in the business of reconciling the world to God's self, whatever that, however that looks like. And I write about this stuff in my book. So, you know, the ins and outs of what I think.
So speaking of books, though, and some of the stuff you're saying that God is not like, you know, so what do you do with the Bible verses? You kind of look at it like, I know there's the school of thought of like humanity's understanding of God progressing throughout the Bible. Is that what you do with some of the more bloody verses that we have in the Old Testament, you know, where God's telling people go in and basically kill the entire village, don't leave anybody alive, you know, take the women
or take women
as your own. So like,
well, there's a lot that goes into that. I do talk about this in my books, but I'll be, you know, kind of brief here about specifics. But I for one don't believe the Bible is inerrant and infallible. I don't believe everything in it is theologically correct. Like, take out the facts and all that and when things happen. I don't think the theology is correct all the time. And I don't think the Bible ever argues that it is. The Bible is a conversation with the writers and redactors and editors about what God is like and how they relate to God. So you could have stories with different theologies in the Bible. And just because someone said God said doesn't necessarily mean it's true. It doesn't necessarily, I don't necessarily believe Jesus thought it was necessarily true, because.
But if this is the only way we know who Jesus is through these stories, then how do we, like, how do you, because I'm in the same boat. And so some of this is devil's advocate, but at the same time, where do you stop breaking that down? Like, where do you stop, like, not apologizing for, but saying, well, maybe that's not what that verse really means.
Oh, like, no, I have no problem saying that's what that verse really means. Like, there are verses in the Hebrew Bible and the New Testament that is what that verse means. And it could be harsh and bloody and awful. That's what that means. That doesn't mean it's right, though. So the burden of proof is on, like, the inerrantist who says we have to take this as an authority. I have no reason to take the Bible as an authority. But even if I concede that fact, Jesus had a way of interpreting his scripture that, frankly, Protestants, at least that I know, don't have any care for. They don't care how Jesus read his Bible. I put that in air quotes, because there was no such thing as in the same way that we call it the Bible. But when he interpreted his scriptures, he had a way of doing it. It was creative. It was Jewish.
Parables.
Well, yeah. I mean, even direct quotes. When he quotes Isaiah, he leaves off vengeful passages. When he quotes Isaiah 61, he doesn't read the part that says in the day of vengeance of God in Luke 4. He leaves that part off. So I think, and there's a pattern that both Jesus and Paul does that. So it's well within our right to do that, because I think if anything maligns the character of God, we have no reason to keep that as a theology, even if it says it in what is now the Bible.
So what's to keep it from becoming like a choose your own ending book? I mean, if we're looking at the scriptures and cherry picking what we want to, you know, use as our theology, why Jesus then? I mean, how do we know that any of that is true? How do we know that Jesus is divine? How do we know, you know, some people would say that we're divine. I mean, like, how do you come up with this?
I don't come up with it. I'm fine with saying we're divine. I have, for me personally, I don't necessarily any longer elevate Jesus over the Buddha, for instance. Like I could take the Christian answer and say, because God raised Jesus from the dead. So that points to, well, God's on Jesus' side. So that's why we take Jesus seriously. I have no problem with just saying Jesus was no different than us. And I don't care if you do think Jesus was highly different than us. I'm kind of agnostic in terms of why I would elevate Christianity over other faith traditions.
Right, your allegiance to one faith tradition.
That doesn't for I have one listeners, more just let me clarify. Like, I don't not love Jesus. I think Jesus is important as well.
I just want to revisit like one of my original questions, and because it ties back into, as we're talking about the interpretations or how we view scripture, and you know, me and Seth were going back and forth a second ago about the verse saying, you know, not to lean on your own understanding, but like, I don't know how you cannot, even just reading the Bible, like lean on your own, or if you're not leaning on your own understanding, you're leaning on like the pastors or somebody else who's interpreting it, their understanding, instead of your own. It's not necessarily like, it's not more spiritual to not explore these questions yourself. And so my question would be then, is that one of the verses that you think just got it wrong, or you think that it's been just misinterpreted and misused in 20th century?
No, I think it all comes down to how you interpret things. You know, I could say lean not on your own understanding with a lot of things. Like, I think we need to lean on a community's understanding. When it comes to race issues, we need to lean on Black folks' understanding and listen to them. So there's a lot of things, I'm obviously using that passage creatively. I think the problem then is interpretation. Like, if you want to interpret it to mean, don't use your brain to think about the Bible, well, fine. But that's just, I don't know. It just seems, it seems like a childish way to approach things. Like, when you approach the Bible, it's always through your understanding. You cannot not be subjective. You are a subjective person. Right. I'm a subjective person. So even if I think there's objective truth in the Bible, I approach it subjectively. So I don't even know how you can avoid not having some of your understanding.
Thank you.
Yeah. So I want to, since we are currently on Facebook Live, and as in doing so, people have, you know, are going to engage with this conversation, and I want to read,
if it's engaging,
yeah, and I want to read one of the comments that was left, because I think it kind of goes with this. Ryan Corwin Walker commented that my church used to describe the Bible as progressive revelation. This is how they explained away the Old Testament, basically that God hadn't given us the full story yet. I guess they viewed Jesus as the end of that revelation. Sounds like this guy, Matthew, believes that the progressive revelation continues to this day. Would that be a fair assessment?
Sure. Loosely. I don't think God stopped speaking to people. I've never heard an audible voice of God, so don't get me wrong. If some people have, I'm not going to discredit your experiences, but I don't think there's any reason to believe that if God worked and spoke to people during the first century and before, that stopped. And so I think the question the Jews, the Hebrew people, have always asked is, how do we relate to God? How do we relate to God now? So in the 21st century, how do we relate to God now? And there's going to be different insights and different things that we glean from life just based on our circumstances.
That's good. It's pretty good. I like it.
I mean, I hope so. Otherwise, I'm just bullshitting and making shit up as I go. And we all are, but maybe we're doing that too.
I think you're probably going to have some people that think that, but what is God then? If God is, you know,
what is God? Holy shit.
Well, I have to ask that because you say that you don't really make a distinction between the Buddha or Jesus. And we know, you know, as former Christians, or at least some of us as former Christians would say, oh, we were, you know, indoctrinated with this idea that Jesus is the only way to God because he is the Son of God. And we're also told that his ways are not our ways and that, you know, the ways of God are foolishness to those that don't know him. And so therefore throw out your logic, believe this. So what is God? I mean, if you're interpreting it and you're still going back to God, but you're not indicating that Jesus is necessarily any better than the Buddha, what is God then?
For me, the best explanation actually comes from the Hindu tradition. So it's a word, Sachit Ananda, and it can be loosely translated in English to being, consciousness, and bliss. So I see God as pure beingness and God is consciousness. I don't think consciousness comes from like the brain. I think the brain is more like a conduit for consciousness. So I would have consciousness more as a primal building block.
That connects us all. Sure.
Yeah. Like a cosmic consciousness, if you will. And then experienced as pure bliss. So whenever you experience bliss, you're experiencing God. I think God is more of an experience than a being. I don't see God as a being, as a deity. That to me was my childish way of thinking of God as an old man in the sky. We say he's not really, and I use pronouns like he, right? It's hard to get away from that language, right? But I don't know what else we're supposed to do. So I see us as beings, as experiencing life, but God as just being as such, not necessarily one of the beings.
And would you say that God is the creator?
Sure, I suppose.
How so?
Like, how?
If he's just consciousness or consciousness and pure bliss, how is he creating anything?
Oh, I don't know how the Big Bang happened. Quantum fluxes and things like that. I have no clue. I mean,
but would you say that would be at the hand of God or not? Is that something that you would attribute to God, or would you just attribute that to happenstance, you know, science, physics, all that stuff? And would you say that as a God is a consequence of said Big Bang, or would you say that God created the Big Bang?
I think when we say God, typically it's something that like happened or something, like we think of God as like existing within the universe. I think of it as both like transcending the universe and within the universe. But this to me is one of those questions that I hold like in the palm of my hand, like a baby bird, because I don't know.
And no one could ever know.
So it's one of those things where I'm inclined to say yes to all of your questions. And I know they're not yes or no questions.
Right.
And so, but that's the place where I've gotten where I'm like, I don't need to answer that with certainty. And I think the folly of many people of faith is right there.
Yes.
They trade in their faith for certainty. And then the two are kind of opposite. Like, I don't remember who said it first, but doubt is not the opposite of faith. Certainty is.
So. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's really good.
So then where does Jesus fit into that?
I think Jesus understood what I'll call the capital W way as well as anyone. It's a way of being, a way of living with our fellow human, a way of living communally, non-violently, non-retributively. And as a mimetic creature, as one who imitates like we all do, if I'm going to imitate anyone, it's going to be someone who refuses to get into rivalries with each other. We see this all throughout the Gospels. Like when Peter wants, you know, he's questioning Jesus going to his death, like Peter, it seemed like wanted a violent revolution in that messianic tradition, in that way of understanding it, when Jesus has to call him Satan and get behind him, right? So Jesus refuses to enter into these rivalries that we all enter into and can't help but enter into. So, you know, he's one of those models that I try to take on. There are others though. You know, I think we can take on others as models. Francis sure. of Assisi, the Buddha.
How did you get from fundamentalism to this idea of
a lot of drugs?
Collective. No, okay.
Which one?
Explain.
That was actually exactly where I wanted to go to, Elizabeth.
And
I want to just add part of her question. I want to add to that. Can we also find out a little bit about your emotional experience through that? Because that is a big transition from fundamentalism to where you're at now.
But so not just emotional. It's got to be the whole thing. Because emotions, but your brain goes.
Yes, it does.
Yeah. It's, I think it starts with a posture of wanting to know the truth regardless of consequence. And I've always wanted to know the truth. And there comes a breaking point where you can no longer accept the answers you've been given by pastors, by interlocutors, by people on the worship team. When you ask these things like, hey, yo, Bible endorses slavery. What are we going to do with that? You know, and what you're telling me, I'm not cool with. Like, oh, well, they treated their slaves nicer. Huh? Doesn't work for me. I'm not going to stay there. So there's 100 or 1,000 of those Bible questions that I could have chosen. Slavery is an easy one because the Bible does never condemn slavery outright. But they'll come up with ways to explain it away, and it wasn't good enough for me. So you go on this journey asking all those questions that are like that, and you get to a place where it's why Michelle and I are calling our book Learning to Float. You don't actually get anywhere. You learn how to float in the water that you used to splash about and drown in. And so you just keep going from this path of fundamentalism to fundamentalism light to liberal Christianity. And then you're like, well, okay, but what about people who've never heard Jesus? So it can't just be totally about Jesus, because certainly God would come up with a better plan than that. Like, so what about all these other people? What about Muslims who are treating others with kindness and peace and love? Like, how are they still kind of wrong when I see Christians with so much vitriol? So I'm still on that journey of I have not arrived anywhere. You know, I just have a posture of trying to grow as a person and trying to know what the truth is, regardless of how uncomfortable it makes me feel in the moment. And my emotion, it all over the place. I think Michelle Collins in her first book likens the whole deconstruction thing to the grief cycle. So everything on that, like, you lose people, you lose friends, you lose family. You think you're going crazy. Like, you're alone. You believe all these new things. Why do you believe them? Everyone around you doesn't. Like, what's wrong with you? Why can't I just read my Bible and accept it? You lose family. You start to accept things. Then you go back. Like, you start to deny things. You start to, like, kind of bargain with God, you know? So all over the place. And that's what's scary for a lot of people. So I guess that's it. See you guys now.
That was definitely a mic drop moment for sure. Wow. I mean, I think what you just described, like, I know everybody here can relate with, and I think there's so many, especially of our listeners, are going to really relate with how you just articulated that process, because that is what it's like, and that's where we're at, and you never do arrive. And that, I think that's the biggest thing to just, but there's also like a sense of like comfort in that. You feel like once you realize you never do arrive, you feel like you arrived at the same time. Yeah. It's kind of like, oh, okay, well it is all about this journey. So this is where we're at.
Yeah. I think it's kind of like you learn that like the destination is not the goal. Like, the journey is the goal. Like, it's like how people say, like, you don't get towards peace. You live from a place of peace. You don't like get there. You just realize you are like God or no God. Like, I'm not going to be punished for being wrong. I don't have to gain 10,000 facts about something before I know something. You know, like, so it's all, you just become comfortable, like, in your uncomfortability, I guess.
I think that's one of the, Yeah, I think that's one of the biggest abuses of the church, you know, is to constantly be pushing this afterlife mentality on you. Like, oh, well, you're storing up rewards now, but I'm completely miserable with this one gift that I've been given of life, you know, in this time, you know. So, but, oh, don't worry about that because you're, you know, you're sowing seeds in heaven or whatever, you know. And it's like, what bullshit is that? You know, like, I've been given a life, regardless of whether it was from a creator God or whether it was by happenstance. I've been given this one chance at life, and I'm going to have peace now. I'm going to have love now. I'm going to live it to the fullest now. Yeah. I think the church, you know, Omar can attest, you know, working for free for the church because he's storing up rewards in heaven. How many years did you do that?
You keep saying like sowing your seed and storing up rewards in heaven. Are you sure you weren't like Muslim? I mean, are you getting virgins or what's going on here?
No, we get the crowns. Like there's the crown of jewels and all that. But you know, something funny my daughter said when she was 9 years old, and she's only 10 now. She said, you know, it's something like this. It's funny that it's always now. And now it's now. And now it's now. And I was like, damn, you're woke. Like, it's never not now. And so you're right. Like, it is true that the church has so missed the boat here. That we're all worried about the afterlife, but really all we concretely have is right now.
That's right.
Yeah. And I want to just also mention, because you, when talking about deconstruction being like a grief cycle, I mean, you did call out Michelle Collins, and I just want to note that book in which she actually paints that picture.
Who?
And runs through those different stages.
Michelle Collins for president. Hello.
She's going to be, her book is coming out at the end of November, I believe. And so I just want to, you know, throw some.
And the book
there.
Is better than the foreword. Because... the foreword sucks.
Let me get it. You write it. There you are. And I think she wrote the foreword to your book, Heretic, if I'm not wrong.
Yeah, she did. Yeah.
Yeah. So
there we are.
If you can't tell, Seth is definitely jealous of Matthew and Michelle's relationship. And so just a little bit of bitter.
I am. Just
I've known Michelle
bit.
For five There's... years, so I, unless you've known her longer.
No, you have right. full cred. Yes. Like, you get all of it. But that does not stop my jealousy.
We are my medic beans. We are my medic beans. I understand it.
So, you know.
Yeah.
There you are.
Right on. Well, there is something that you mentioned, or Seth actually mentioned in your bio way back, and I know that you had some music experience because you led worship. It sounds like you went to school for music.
Let's talk
a little bit about that.
I did undergrad in music and education.
Because you ended up in hip hop somehow from like, I mean, talking about like if being a evangelical Christian to whatever you are now isn't a transition, being a worship leader for evangelical church to a hip hop artist is also a transition that I want to know about.
Yeah, well, so, I mean, I've recorded 7 songs. I'm still working on them. It's just like a demo thing. It's just something I did for fun because I totally believe we're all creative beans. Like, it doesn't necessarily mean I'm gonna like go tour or anything, but it's just, you know, I like to create music as kind of a side thing, as you know, in addition to podcasting and writing. The good thing about my worship experience is I never got into Christian music, so I did not listen to Christian bands at all. Like in sixth grade, I listened to Snoop Dogg and Dre. I listened to Eminem. Like I got in all types of music. Like when I listened to metal, I listened to metal. I didn't listen to Christian metal per se. Like when I listened to rock, I listened to rock. I did not seek out Christian bands. I always thought they were trying too hard. My dog likes to freak the fuck out. Sorry.
So no KJ52 then?
No. I don't even know who said.
Oh, well.
Probably
well,
good.
That's bless okay. you then, that's yes. Okay.
Yeah. Is that the Dear Slim guy?
I think so. Yeah, yeah.
He helped me so much. KJ52. That like I had that on repeat, guys. Right along with Jars of Clay.
Oh and God!
Well, it's gross. Funny. We just on Heretic Happy Hour. We just interviewed Kevin Max. He was in DC Talk. And I told the guys like I never listened to. I don't know who you are really because didn't get. He's like, oh, you're lucky. Like you didn't get into Christian music. He's like, good for you.
What did you think of him?
I thought he was great to talk to. I don't know. I don't know anything about DC. I know they had a song called Jesus Freak. I listened to it the other day, and I was like, oh, I remember this. I don't want to be mean, but like, not for me.
Maybe he's grown a little bit because about 10 years ago, I ran sound for him at a coffee shop and he was the biggest douchebag ever.
We all have bad days. I have no idea. He seemed totally nice. Yeah. Like I enjoyed talking to him. Yeah.
Well, good.
Yeah. Good. Cause you've never been a douchebag in your day in your life, Chris.
No, I know I have. So
I'm going to swing this back to the theology.
Swing it on back.
But
come
we were
on
enjoying
in.
The yeah. music talk. Come on, well, non-musician.
Seth hates music.
I know.
Wait, I got to say, I don't understand. I know people who say I hate music and I can wrap my mind around a lot of things like support for Trump. I get it. I don't agree with it, but sorry if I offended any listeners, but I don't understand anyone saying I don't like music.
No, if
you've ever been
about,
in a cult before, then you can understand support for Trump. But yeah,
the music that a lot of the people in our community listen to is something I don't consider music.
Seth likes like house music, like like Cher type stuff.
Please. Okay, I'm going back.
Cher is not house music. What the fuck?
No. She is now.
Since we are on live, PK Langley has left two questions, and I want to read these because I think these are good. And
okay.
I think
well, before you do that, Seth, I just want to say everything about you, Matt, I've thoroughly enjoyed, especially even your music choices. Sounds like our Pandora stations probably are playing the same stuff. So sorry we can't talk about music, but we do have a podcast called Open Mic. If you ever want to feature any of your songs, you like maybe like two or three of your best songs.
That's right.
Or just come talk music with the musicians.
Yeah. So, anyway, yeah. We'll get to PK Langley's question now. All right, thanks.
Okay. I'm just saying they listen to all the screamo crap, Matthew. Like it's not music.
Not all of us listen to
we
the
don't.
Screamo
I don't.
Crap.
Yeah, nobody
seriously,
here does.
How many years have we been podcasting together, Seth? Seriously.
I don't mean you.
You.
I'm talking about like
who's in the conversation right now talking about music.
Our listeners, our supporters. He's talking about the millennials.
I'm talking about PK Langley. So she said, "I have a question. Do you think that people fall into similar patterns outside of the church that they followed within the church, like every man for themselves, shunning superhero mentality or superstar mentality, and then?" A second question, do you believe that we will ever, in this human existence, live life outside of the church in a Book of Acts type of experience where we will all lay down our lives and pour our money and efforts all in for the message of God's love?
Never. Oh, I think you're muted, or is it?
Yeah, we can't hear you.
Oh, interesting. Doesn't look like he's muted.
No.
No, it doesn't.
Technical difficulties. Hold on 1 second.
Why are the two non-musicians singing right now?
I don't know. Why are you guys were doing scales earlier. It was annoying as fuck.
Scales can be annoying, but it's okay. We're learning.
That's right. I need help. And she's helping me. She's so sweet. Hey, I'm going to take this opportunity to shout out a podcast that's fantastic. I want you to go check out Facing Off Podcast. They talked about me a lot on their last episode. It was awesome. Gabe and Nick over at the Facing Off Podcast.
Those guys
you read my emails every time I email them too. That's
a podcast
fun.
Talked about Chris, and Chris is now so excited because yeah. this doesn't happen very often. So he's just overwhelmed and doesn't know what to do with himself. So he's very excited about it.
Well, they're good dudes too, and the podcast is pretty interesting.
Try one thing, okay, and listeners out there on Facebook, just 30 seconds, 45 seconds. Try Matt. Try hanging up. And coming back into the call and see if that does anything.
I wonder if he'll be able to join back in.
Why wouldn't he?
He should be able to.
I don't know. Zoom is weird sometimes about that.
If you kick him out, maybe he's not able
if
to.
If you kick him out, that's when it's weird. But if they leave, it should be fine. Typically.
Gotcha.
I'm liking this conversation.
It's a great conversation.
Sorry that I pulled the conversation away from from music. That was very disheartening.
Oh no.
Try unplugging your external mic altogether.
I think he did already.
Oh.
Yeah.
I just lip read that he said I did.
Yeah.
We got nothing.
It's okay.
And we need our intercessory prayer team to pray. We have Satan's attacking us through technology right now.
That's right.
And so,
Lord, we pray that you would place a hedge of protection over this Zoom conference right now.
What type of shrubbery should we pray for? I'm going for like a
I don't even know what type of shrubbery there is.
I don't know either. That's why I went with
roses. Rose bushes don't make great shrubberies, but it's
but
okay.
they have thorns though.
They do
have thorns.
But so do those little red bushes. But so do those little red bushes that we have. Their thorns are even worse. They get stuck up under my fingernails and hurt like hell.
Nothing.
Hey! There's something there.
We have action.
It's a little low. I know. For me, at least.
Is that better? Well, PK, I think I know why it works now. PK commented that she pleads the blood.
Yeah, she did.
She pleaded it, and guess what? Now you have sound.
I've never seen a prayer of Chris's not come true, too. I just want to say that as well. I mean, and see how quick that was, too? Like, one small hedge. And apparently rose bushes work, just so you guys know.
Yeah, hopefully it works. I don't know what that was about. I'm sorry.
There we go. Right, you're good? Yeah. Yeah, sorry about that, man.
Should I reread the question?
Yeah,
I think we should just start over from the beginning.
Yeah, right.
I'm Omar.
Reread it.
First one.
So, since we are on Facebook Live, PK Langley left a comment, and she asked two questions. She says, "Do you think that people fall into similar patterns outside of the church that they followed within the church, like every man for themselves, shunning superstar mentality?"
Let him answer.
I
think we are all mimetic, imitative creatures. We all take on models of desire, and that happens in the church and it happens outside of the church. I'm of the belief that most everyone, whether they believe in God or not, are religious, ritualistic. I believe that even if you don't have a theology, you kind of have a theology. even if it doesn't label it God, I believe we're all have a propensity to scapegoat one another. We all have I'm assuming all of us are American here, for God's sake. In the church, we're more American than we're Christian. So whether we're in the church or not, we are highly, did we just lose someone? We are highly.
You just offended Chris.
He
hates America.
Fuck this shit. I'm out of here.
He's like, this is America bullshit.
What was I saying?
we're all tribalistic.
In America, we're all individualistic, whether we're in the church or not. I think of course we're going to fall into those traps. There's a large section of the left, the progressive, who are really fundamentalist as well. There's a lot of atheists. Who are fundamentalists.
Don't get Chris started. You're going to get Chris going right now, Matthew. Well, if you talk anything
I
about
think the left
finish.
Is the new religion.
Excited.
It's a new
finish,
religion.
Seth.
Yeah, it's bad. And by the way, I really appreciate
Chris,
the way you handle.
I saw
him handle a situation from someone like that who's very religious, on the concept of woke, wokeness to the point of religion. And you did a very good job, actually. I was actually thoroughly impressed with how you handled it, because most of the time that person that you were speaking with would have shut you down and said, "Oh, I have boundaries. I can't respond to that because I have boundaries." And the truth is that they just don't have a really good argument for, you know, what you're saying, and they don't want to be, you know, pointed out as wrong. And I think that you handled that beautifully, by the way.
Well, thanks.
Anyway,
I don't know what you're referring to, but I'm sure I did. I'm sure I did a
Rhea
good
Dickerson.
Job.
Jesus. Yeah.
Jesus.
Christ. To the second question, I don't know. I don't know if we'll ever get to a place where we live as if, you know, my stuff is your stuff and we all share in harmony without like coercion and force and all that. I think that's the idea, that we bring about the kingdom of God. As a cynic, as one who looks and observes the world out there right now, I'm like, not in my life, but maybe some sort of divine intervention. I don't know. Deus ex machina comes and swoops and saves the day. But short of that, I don't know. But do I want it to be closer to that for my daughter? And if she has kids, her kids and future generations, I would, yeah, that'd be great.
It feels to me that like that early church mentality is something of a utopia that the rest of the world, like Christians, that's like their ultimate like utopian goal, or some people feel like that's like the ultimate Christian utopia, and utopias are so unrealistic and so unattainable. Like anytime anybody tries to make some type of utopia, it just falls apart.
And like, it's subjective because everybody's utopia is different.
And look,
too,
like it's so unfair to think that the early Christians had it 100% right. I don't think they did. I think they were at odds with one another almost from the get-go. You have Paul and his conflicts with the Jerusalem church. You have his letter to the Galatian churches that is super pissed off. He tells people to finish the job when cutting their penises. Like, he's not happy. Things are not going well from the get-go. So we have this...
They're having orgies in some of the temples, and then they're also telling you not to sleep with your husband's wives. There was some like weird shit that like, he had to put in his letters telling people.
Yeah,
not
there
to
was
do.
A lot
like,
of that, and there was, you know, we have this romanticized view of the church, and I think the idea is great. I don't think it worked out maybe for like the first week, and then they're like, you know, they're human, right? And maybe it was longer than a week. I'm just kidding. But, you know, maybe 3 weeks or something.
Well, let's look at the second question as well. Do you believe that we will ever, in this human existence, live life?
I think he already answered that one.
That's what we just talked about.
In the Book of Acts type of experience,
where
we lay down our lives.
No. I don't think so. But I don't have any reason to believe that my experience, if I have an experience after death, is any different than this one. I'm just, if I experience something outside of this human experience, I don't have any recollection of it. So my only experience is this experience. So yeah, I guess in a way, but maybe not. I mean, I'd be very agnostic about that anyway.
Shout out to your 9-year-old daughter, because I love that, by the way.
Oh, yeah, she's
the, like living in the right now, and that's all we really have is now. So while we worry about anything else,
that's really awesome.
Perfect.
Yeah,
it's gorgeous. So I want to ask you.
I wish I was that intuitive whenever I was that age.
But
what are you working on right now?
That's what I want to know.
As always, the podcast, the Heretic Happy Hour, and Apostates Anonymous. I had another podcast, but my co-host got he went off and got cancer, so he had to take a break.
Oh,
yeah. So he's chemo right now, but he's doing well.
Chris, so. Do the hedge thing.
Well, the funny thing is I honestly thought you were about to say he went off and got himself canceled, and I was going to talk about cancel culture, but yeah, that's funny. I'm sad to hear that about your partner there.
Yeah, that's horrible. But so he's still writing the Bonfire Sessions books with me, so those are coming out on Kindle right now every 3 months, and there's one more to come. So I'm doing that. I'm writing the book with Michelle. Our first draft is pretty much done, so it'll be out on Choir at some point. I don't know when. We don't have a date, so it still needs to be edited. And then what else am I doing? I can't keep up. Oh, I've got this really cool book that I wasn't sure was going to come out. It's with an artist named Zach Parsons. It's called The Genesis of Violence. So it's like an interpretation of Genesis, and he did the artwork for it. So it's kind of like a picture book, and it's super violent and amazing. And all the pictures that he drew like would make great tattoos. So they're like super creative and interpretive, and Genesis is violent and awesome. So it's going to be violent and awesome too.
Didn't Seth say at the beginning of this episode that you work against violence?
You're an outspoken advocate for nonviolence. Yeah. It's literally
so we can't end with that being your last words.
If
then.
You Google Matthew DeStefano, that's the like everywhere you go, you will see this phrase, outspoken advocate for nonviolence.
Yeah. So I think in order to be nonviolent, we have to confront our violence. We have to be real with our violence and transparent with our violence.
Here we go.
What does that look
like?
Well,
I mean, like in the Christian world, we have to stop pretending that that our God, it says a lot of violent things about him. So we cannot demonize Muslims, for instance, for being so violent, because our God and our book is way more violent than the Quran.
Even Christian heritage is like way more violent than like even like current day Islamic heritage in a way. I mean, like if you look at the Crusades.
And, sure.
like what that did through like changing history, I think.
Or the Philistines or anything like
Or you're talking about Palestine too, like what's going on right now with all that. Anyway, that's let's not get too political.
Yeah, we have to confront our violence. And so I think we have to, you know, we can't just pretend here and pretend it doesn't exist. Like we have, and when I say it's like awesome and violent, I just mean like it's a good story. Like I don't think we should act like people in the Bible necessarily. I don't think that's the greatest thing in the world. But you know, I watch violent movies, I play violent video games, but I don't like worship it. And I think we need to work towards eliminating it. I think we need to take nonviolent approaches. For instance, when I worked in group homes, you know, we did use force. Like we did tackle kids and wrestle kids and restrain kids and all that. But we learned how to talk to them in order to try to avoid that at all costs if we could. So we need to do that in all aspects of you know, our lives. I think we need to take more creative approaches to policing. We need to take more creative approaches to raising our kids. But sometimes, you know, I'm not one of these pacifists who said no force ever. Because if I did that, I would have let kids get sexually assaulted by other kids. I would have let kids probably kill one another. Like, I think it's absurd to say no force ever. It just doesn't work in the practical world.
What do you think about all the people that are speaking, you know, of calling
and things like not? Oh, I think there's a lag. Or
No, go ahead. I think there's a lag too. My bad. I think my internet's bad. Go ahead.
I'm gonna let you ask your question.
Oh, I think it's probably the same thing. I think, you know, speaking of, you know,
absurdity,
basically what you're talking about, like the I'm thrown off a little bit, but speaking on nonviolence and stuff, how do you feel about the whole defund the police thing?
Well, I it depends on what you mean by that. I don't necessarily agree that we need no police, if that's what you mean, but I don't think that's what people mean. I think they just mean that more money needs to be put into other methods rather than having police officers do things that they should not be doing. Like you shouldn't have police officers doing 1,000 different things. They're not going to be good at it.
Yes.
And they've shown that they're not good at it. So we need to rethink the entire model. There's no reason. Well, for one, I mean, like there should be no like drug task force. Cause I'm like a proponent, like end the drug war. Fuck that shit. It's racist.
Absolutely.
It ruins lives.
Yes.
I can light up right now on camera and people are locked away for weed. Like that is the most ridiculous thing to me in the world. So, and the money that is used to fight those things needs to be put into mental health, needs to be put in, you know, it's absurd. The people who like straw man it say, oh, well, social workers are just going to show up to everything and they're going to do that. That's like, I've de-escalated some pretty crazy shit that you guys, maybe you just don't understand what social workers do. Like I've kept naked children from sexually assaulting other people without anyone getting hurt. Like we've done some pretty crazy shit that for really little money, like don't shit on social workers. We can do some pretty good stuff. Do we still need cops? Yeah. But I think we need to rework the whole model.
Yeah. Like why are we calling cops when there's a homeless person?
Right.
You know, like it's so strange. And yeah, go for it.
Well, I just wanted to know, specifically looking at social workers going out into the community and actually doing this type of thing. In my previous job working for the crisis line for the eastern region of Missouri, we had an outreach team, and like that was half of everything we did. And we found that when we were dispatched, almost 75% of the time we could divert from the emergency room. Whereas if police had just shown up or the client remained with themselves, eventually EMS would have been called and they would have ended up in an emergency situation and they would have ended up in the emergency room. By us actually going out into the community and providing that type of support on those types of calls, we were able to divert almost 75% of the time. So to say that social workers can't have a role in working in partnership with police, that's a joke. We're doing it currently.
Yeah.
And if we had more money, we could do more.
Yeah.
So I think that there's a lot to be said about that.
Totally. And did you have a question, Omar?
I think I forgot what it was. I was, it wasn't along the lines of defunding the police, but I think it's just such a harsh, like, line to draw that when most people, like the average person, they see the term defund the police, you're thinking, oh, like, that means get rid of all police. Like, when, what are we going to do if something bad happens? And so it kind of just needs to be like retrain, you know, like things like that. Like, I think it would be like something a little more softer line, more in the gray than like defund. But I mean, technically, I guess you are pulling funds from the police. Yeah. So, but whatever.
But you're not defunding.
The issue that police departments run into, and I know a little bit about this just due to CIT work, crisis intervention team, in which we train police officers in mental health, and you will not find many CIT officers, primarily because in order to receive that form of training requires them to be off of the force like for weeks or months at a time. And our police departments throughout the country are a lot of them are not funded well. They do not have the funds. And if they were to do that, to train their officers, there would be no one running the police department. And so, you know, it's almost like defund, but they also don't have the fund. I mean, it again, bureaucracy, and I mean, they have a lot of money in the upper echelon of law enforcement, but on the ground, locally, a lot of them are struggling, and the issue is police officers' time. But again, I think that we're diverting here.
Yeah,
but I just wanted
definitely
to mention
and I remember what my question was too. So we'll jump back on track, and it may be kind of near the end. I know we've been on for about an hour, and really appreciate your time, Matthew. But
yes.
So something you were saying earlier about kind of like the lunacy of the nonviolent stance in comparison, it reminded me of a Facebook post that I made this week, comparing the idea there, because there's a lot of the whole pro-life movement going on the other side. So we mentioned something on the left with the defunding, but so I'm going to go back over to the right and talk about two issues that, like, it seems like because it's political season and where everybody's voting now, go out and vote, make your choice before the electoral
college. Right, Michelle Collins.
Yes. Anyway, so the question is along the area of nonviolence, because I was asking, you know, if you're really pro-life, because pro-life is, we all know, is just pro-unborn life, because after that life is born, it's like, who gives a fuck? You know, who cares about healthcare and all the other things that would actually help preserve life? And then you have the issue of guns. I'm not anti-gun in any way. It just seems that like a pro-life stance would be an anti-gun or an anti-violence stance. And for someone who's anti-violent, what is your stance on guns?
Well, their response would be that they are pro-life, which is why you need a gun to defend yourself from bad guys with guns. But that would be their argument. It's not my argument. My stance on guns, it's a nuance, like everything, pretty much, is that, like, if you're a hunter, you should, I think if you eat meat, you should probably kill an animal at least once in your life to understand what the process is like.
Absolutely.
I am not anti-hunting at all. I'm pro, in a good way, in a positive way, like not butchering animals for the sake of doing it, but like, you know, hunting with ethics and all that kind of stuff.
Or hunting fishing is a lot better than what they do now for mass producing meat, as far as slaughterhouses go and all that shit.
So, I'm a big hiker. I don't personally have a gun. I wish I did when I go on long hikes in the wilderness and I realize, oh, this is mountain lion country. I've done 3 years of jiu-jitsu, but I'm probably sure I'm going to get my ass kicked.
Black bear too.
Did you see the video of that?
I've seen some videos that someone got attacked by a mountain lion. They choked him out or something.
Well, the one I saw was this guy backing up from one for like over six minutes.
Six
it was
minutes.
Crazy.
Wow.
Yeah, I saw that.
And he eventually got away, but it was absolutely terrifying.
That gives me like nightmares. I read an article about someone who was attacked. They got like a rear naked choke on a mountain lion. But I mean, he got messed up, but he won the fight. But
sure.
Regardless, like I wish I have at least a handgun in that situation, because you know, you can at least scare a wild animal. As far as guns go to like protect yourself, I'm not someone who thinks that a group of people with guns should go take your guns. Like, I'm not like an advocate for that, but I personally don't believe more guns solves the situation. Like the Wild West, everyone had a gun and it was pretty violent. Like good guys with guns.
Yeah.
And plus good guys with guns aren't trained. Like you don't know who a good guy with a gun right. is in a situation because you're full of shit if you think you're a superhero. At the same time, like I don't want all guns taken away. Like I just think that's
common sense gun laws.
Yeah, we need common sense.
Or some nuance. Yeah.
I'm totally fine with common sense gun laws. I think most even like hardcore progressives are cool with common sense gun laws. Yeah. We don't have that now.
Right. And you do have some pretty radical, you know, people on the right who, I don't know if you saw it or not, but Sacha Baron Cohen had this show on Showtime where
I love that show.
He, you know, oh, it's great. And the Kindergartians, right? Where he, you oh know, they God, had this guy so on bad. Here who actually thought it was a good idea to arm kindergartners. Like, are you insane? You know, as a teacher, the idea that some of these teachers, no offense to any of you that I've worked with, should be packing heat. You never know what kind of mood someone's going to come into school with, you know, like, no, just no, absolutely not.
Shout out to Sasha though, by the way, too. Cause Borat 2 just released.
Yeah. I watched it last night. I was up pretty late.
Same.
Yeah. Same. I watched it too. We could actually talk. So we need to get you on to talk movies that molded me. We can talk Sacha Baron Cohen stuff.
Yeah, because you like violent movies too.
And we can get you on for open mic to talk about your music. After, cool. But we need. So, but yeah, let's wrap with this last couple questions. This last question, and maybe like one more. Sure. So
yeah, I got nothing going tonight. So whatever you guys got, man. Honestly.
We're about to actually record again in 15 minutes to talk about the topic of nuance.
Oh, good.
With our on another platform of ours, shout out to, as we're shouting out a bunch of different shit, to Fade to Gray Network. And so you can catch us over there in about 15 minutes. We'll also share here too as well. Thanks for joining us out there live. Is there any questions from listeners that we want to get to or anybody here before we wrap up? If not, we'll let Matthew do some plugging one more time and maybe have him on. I know it's up in the air. I don't know if we talked about it or not. I don't want to throw it out there for Facebook. We can do like a Facebook vote if we want Matthew on the town hall. But anyway.
I just really want to just, again, to kind of wrap up, just promote all the things that you're doing because you really are very, very active. Two podcasts. By the way, and I am curious really quickly, Apostates Anonymous, what's that about? I know I get Heretic Happy Hour, but what does Apostates Anonymous mean? Like, what's that podcast about?
It's just me ranting and raving about whatever.
Oh, then I think... I would very much like it.
Yeah. Okay. It's a tongue in cheek. You know, we use Heretic Happy Hour. We use Heretic tongue in cheek. I use Apostate tongue in cheek. I typically try to have a guest, you know, so I've had Michelle, I've had Derek Day, I've had all the Heretic Happy Hour crew. I've had other friends and talk to them for 20 minutes. And then I rant and rave like a lunatic for another 20 or 30 minutes after that about whatever's going on. It's kind of just cause the Bonfire Sessions had to take a hiatus cause of Mike and his health and COVID hit and we're not doing anything, right? We can't go out anywhere. So being at home and my daughter's doing, distance learning in the other room half the time. So I was like, why not yell at a microphone for an hour?
Yeah. Well, you can't leave your house because you're in California. Down here in Texas, we are open for business, sir.
Well, good for you. we're open. I will right just now, note that. So.
And we're spiking
support.
That's how
Heretic Happy Hour is a patron. Your video with your message,
Mr. Moneybags over here.
Shut up! I wanted to hear this video. His message to evangelicals is awesome, and I just want to note that, like, to kind of wrap that up. Like, if you support their podcast, you get there's a lot of really cool stuff you get a part of, and I found that message to be very.
Seth's editing this episode,
and then also. So Bonfire Sessions has been put at, you've kind of took a break on that. And then when are you looking at, you're writing this new book with Michelle, Learning to Float. And then that when are you projecting that to come out?
If I took,
do you have any idea? I think you already said.
Yeah,
you don't
if I took
know,
a guess, it would be like summer or fall of 2021. If a meteor hasn't taken us all out by then, which, yeah, I'm okay with. Yeah,
that's what's next.
It seems
it's a meteor, huh? Is that what your money's on? I was going to aliens, man.
No, aliens came and we already identified the Navy's. I identified them. We didn't give a shit.
Yeah.
we shot them down and ate them.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't be surprised.
It's in the Happy Meals.
Oh, gross.
Oh, my God.
Do you have any social media platforms that people could follow you on if they want to just kind of stay in touch and watch for the books?
Yeah, you know, all of them. Twitter and Instagram, it's at MJ_DiStefano. And then on Facebook, I don't know the handle. Do Facebooks have handles? You just Matthew J.
Yeah.
DiStefano.
I think they do. Yeah.
It's the at.
Yeah, so if you put at Matthew J. DiStefano, you might find me. But Facebook's where I do most of the stuff. I don't know, because I'm old. I'm almost 40. I guess young people don't fuck any longer.
Say,
most of us here are almost 40. So
okay.
Yeah, dude, we really need to record again, because I think we can rap about it, especially if we do movies that molded me, because we talk about movies from our childhood and shit that we grew up in. So
I'm actually not really a movie guy, but we can talk about them.
Okay.
TV shows?
TV shows?
Sure. The Office.
Yes! Boo that guy. Yes! All right. Yeah. So anyway, we'll talk music.
Yeah, we'll talk music. There you go.
Abraham Lincoln once said, "If you're racist, I will attack you with the North."
One of the greatest lines ever.
Yes. All right. Thanks, guys.
So good.
It's been a blast. Check us out on all the socials. Check out Matthew. And we'll catch you next time.